This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. Our guests include Chuck Hawthorne, a remarkable musician who was a more than 30-year veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps. He's performing tonight at the Dyson House, and we'll talk with him about his amazing odyssey into the world of music. Also, we are slated to hear from Stephen Handwerk, the executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party. He will talk about what's going on with the Blue Party in Louisiana, in a solidly red state. Governor John Bel Edwards, who will be with us this afternoon at 2 o'clock, is up for re-election, and we'll talk with Stephen about that. And also about the age of Trump and how it is affecting the Democratic Party in Louisiana. Donald Trump won this state with 58% of the votes 2 years ago. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF. Your numbers are 877-217-5757. Wherever you are, and in Baton Rouge, you can save a few digits by dialing 297-5633. The email address is talk@talklouisiana.org. We start with Stephen Handwerk, the veteran executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party. He's been on this job for more than 6 years, the pride of Lafayette. Stephen Handwerk is with us to talk about a few different matters. And if anything's on your mind regarding party politics or national, local politics, Stephen's at your service, 877-217-5757. We begin, Stephen, with a discussion briefly about the True Blue Gala. Terry McAuliffe, the former governor of Virginia and former Democratic Party chair, was with us a few days ago, and he is gearing up for this event. He will be the keynoter come Saturday at the Crown Plaza here in Baton Rouge. And what is the objective of uniting the Democratic flock with a major person in the party?
Look, hey, Jim, thank you so much for having me on. Yeah, look, we're really excited. Our dinner is, the True Blue Gala is actually this Friday, and Governor McAuliffe is coming in to join us. And look, I think that he has a really strong message that a lot of folks are going to want to hear. He went into a state that had pretty much Republican control in both of his chambers, and he was able to accomplish a lot of great things and hold their feet to the fire and really improve life for a lot of the individuals living in Virginia. And so we're excited to hear from him as he comes down to our state. And this is really an opportunity. We're bringing this back to Baton Rouge this year because we really wanted to focus on our legislators. Too often we forget about the hard work that they do. How many special sessions have they now gone through? How much work are they doing and getting done for the people of this state? So this year we get to honor a lot of our legislative heroes. And we're excited for that.
And you are correct. It is this Friday, the 18th. If you come on Saturday, you may see some interesting things at the Crown Plaza, but you probably won't see Terry McAuliffe. But it is Friday, and I understand that it's, of course, the Crown Plaza has big meeting rooms. There are seats available for those who would like to attend. What's the best way to do so, Stephen Handwerk?
The best and easiest way is just log on to our website. We do have a few tickets left. It's LouisianaDemocrats.org, and there's a way for you to plug in right through there. Click on Terry McAuliffe's photo, and that will take you right into our dinner. We do have a few tickets left, but we need to give final count to the hotel by the end of the day today. So anyone that's interested in coming and joining us and honoring our legislative heroes, do that. And Jim, we do have some news that we have on this. The exciting part of this is this will be officially our largest dinner that we've ever had in Baton Rouge. Ticket sales have gone over that top. So this is going to be a big dinner, and we're super excited about it.
All right. It is Friday. And what time do you get started?
We're going to get started at 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock. So come with your big smiles on and come as you are.
Friday, the 18th.
Yep.
George Strait's
right.
Birthday, Terry McAuliffe, the man from Virginia, former head of the Democratic National Committee. He will be in-house, and I'm sure he will give a stirring speech. He's a very good speaker, and it is interesting that he is coming to Louisiana. He noted in our conversation the other day, Stephen, that Louisiana, and no great secret, is the only Deep South state with a Democratic governor, John Bel Edwards, who, oh, by the way, faces re-election next year. How's it looking?
Well, look, our governor is able to show that he has the highest approval ratings of any Democratic governor in the country. That's pretty exciting for us. The work that our governor has been doing to try and bring people together and get things accomplished is being rewarded by the people of the state. They see the work that he's doing. They also see that the Republicans have been nothing but obstructionists in trying to actually move our state forward. They've lurched us from fiscal cliff to fiscal cliff every single year. They take us further and further down the road, and then they balk and they start complaining about notices going out, when in actuality what they should be complaining is about their ineffectiveness and them not taking this budget crisis seriously. That's a very real problem, and our governor is out there making sure that people understand the severity of what this game, this deadly game that these Republicans are playing.
Well, there will be a special session, and the governor will talk about that later today, 2 o'clock, right here with his monthly program. But as you know, the Republicans dominate the legislature and have every other statewide office, and Governor John Bel Edwards is kind of a voice in the wind. You can only do so much when you don't have the numbers, and he is doing the best he can, I'm sure. But there are those who say it would be better to have somebody who could work in concert better with the Republican majority, and the guy who is giving every indication that he's ramping up to run against John Bel Edwards is a familiar voice and face to Louisiana, John Neely Kennedy. What do you think about the prospect of Kennedy versus Edwards in 2019?
Well, look, first off, I really need to say that if anyone thinks that we should go back to Republican control, anyone should just remind themselves of what we went through with Bobby Jindal. You know what? And John Kennedy was actually a part of that team as well. And I don't see him doing much for our state. He has his little snappy one-liners, but when it actually comes down to delivering for our state, he has been MIA. And the people know that. What also is really galling to me, and I hope others that are listening, is we've got this guy that's just was elected. He barely found out where the bathrooms are in the U.S. Senate, and now he's looking for another job. This, to me, he is a perennial candidate, and people should be exhausted of him. He's not delivering for us, and he certainly wouldn't deliver for us as governor. Our governor has actually shown that he is working to build bridges. He always has his hand lifted out in hoping that Republicans will reach out to it. And the important part about this, Jim, is it's not all of the Republicans in the legislature that are the problem. It is a handful of Republicans that are in leadership that are holding this state back. They're forcing us to go to fiscal cliff to fiscal cliff. It is not the majority of them. It is a small handful that is hurting this state. And we're seeing more and more folks that want to work with us and work with this governor in order to move our state forward.
Well, John Neely Kennedy on this program last week said he would make his decision in, quote, a couple of months. And as we look at the election, Stephen, it's October 12th of next year. So we're inside 17 months now. We're getting close. And if Kennedy's going to run, he knows as well as anybody he's got to announce soon. But he is well known with high name recognition, as you can imagine, from his many runs for office. And he, I think you would acknowledge, is probably a better candidate than David Bruce Vitter, the man that John Bel Edwards dispatched rather easily 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, by a 56-44% margin. So the Kennedy, the prospect of a Kennedy race, I think you would acknowledge that this will be a very competitive battle.
Look, I think that that this race is going to be run, no matter who the candidates are, on what is at stake, what people care about the most, and that is having opportunities for their kids, being able to put food on the table, being able to see things moving in the right direction. Our governor's delivering on that. Everybody else is contributing noise, and they're throwing elbows at our governor for trying to do the right thing. John Neely Kennedy has been on every side of every issue many times, and that's the problem with him. People don't know exactly where he stands. We're seeing that now in the United States Senate. He's really good for his little one-liners, but what has he delivered so far? Nothing. That's the very real problem, and I can't believe that voters are going to want to see him run for yet another office. I think that they're going to summarily dispatch him, just like they've done in the past, and they're probably going to give us an opening to be able to take that seat back from him when he's up for re-election in the United States Senate.
Well, the issues will be many. There is a philosophical divide between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, as we know, and if it's Edwards versus Kennedy, almost all of those issues are in play, with the exception of abortion and guns. But take minimum wage, for example. Stephen Waguspack was on this show yesterday, the head of LABI, and he's steadfast in believing that an increase in minimum wage would wreck the economy in Louisiana, drive a lot of small businesses out of business. John Mealy Kennedy is on one side, John Bel Edwards on the other. Is that the kind of issue that you see as one that will be discussed frequently if we have this battle that we anticipate?
Absolutely. We will fight that battle every single day. People of this state know that it is time that they deserve a raise. We are sitting at a time where we have a $7.25 minimum wage, and you can't get by on that. So what happens is we then have to have government programs in order to help those individuals. All we're doing is subsidizing businesses. That's not fair for our state. That's certainly not fair for our budget for our state and for people who are constantly trying to take away those social programs that are able to help lift people up on bad times. These guys are making it a reality for them if we're not going to force corporations to actually step up, pay people a reasonable wage. Our governor has come forward multiple times asking for very moderate increases to that minimum wage in order to help people get by.
All right, hold tight. We've got another segment with Stephen Handwerk. The number again, 877-217-5757, back after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And if you'd like to send an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. We'll have a few of those that we'll pass along to Stephen Handwerk before we part company. The executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party for more than 6 years, and come Friday night, 7 o'clock, here in Baton Rouge at the Crown Plaza, there is still an opportunity, if you wish, to go see Terry McAuliffe, the very active former head of the Democratic Party, former governor of the great state of Virginia, and it's LouisianaDemocrats.org. LouisianaDemocrats.org if you have an interest in attending. Here's a question about Medicaid expansion. Cameron Henry, one of the stalwarts in the Louisiana House on the Republican side, says much of this projected $648 million shortfall is related to Medicaid expansion. Governor John Bel Edwards says it's been a very good thing for our state. Who's right, Stephen Handwerk?
Our governor, absolutely. He's been able, you know, over 465,000 people, that number may have gone up, have actually been able to get quality, affordable health care. These are working individuals. By definition, these are people who are working, doing all of the right things. They now have coverage. We have a healthier state because of it. And, you know, the federal government is still kicking in the majority of the funds for this. And in order for us to be able to draw down those funds, yes, the state has to kick in a few dollars.
Tally in Lafayette, I think this is a lady, says she was appalled that these 37,000 notices were sent out to people in nursing homes and other places saying that they might be moved out if the state doesn't solve its budget woes. Was this a scare tactic?
Absolutely not. This was reality. We had this, the governor, all of these departments had to act on this, because remember what happened as soon as the Republicans passed their horrible, deadly budget. They told everyone that it was responsible, that it was measured, that it was what we had to do to live within our means. There was no indication that they were ever going to move on that whatsoever. So, of course, we had to be able to, the governor had to be able to let people know that, guess what, these services may be going away, and you might want to apply for other programs that might be able to help you. So, clearly, the governor was forced into doing this by a legislature that thinks that crisis is the way we should manage things.
All right. Holly in the Garden District asks if the Democratic Party is going to court so-called John McCain Republicans.
Look, we're hearing from folks all over the state in all different stripes, especially Republicans that are tired of the game. Republicans that are proud to be able to say that they stand for things. Instead, we're fighting these ideological purity fights that aren't helping anyone, and for certain it's holding our state back. So yes, we are going to be opening up to anyone who would like to talk with us and move our state forward. Remember, it's always going to be about Louisiana first.
Now, there has been a new wrinkle in the North Korean negotiations about North Korea destroying its nukes, but a listener, Charles, asks if President Trump deserves credit for moving the United States at least to a talking situation with North Korea.
Look, I'll give our current president his due. If he's able to accomplish something here, then I will be happy to claim his successes. The problem is that he's ruling by tweets. And now we're back into a situation of we're having these fights back and forth. I'm not an expert on foreign diplomacy, but I think we need a lot more diplomats. And this president has been starving the State Department of the people that could get some of this work done. If he's able to accomplish it, I'll be the first person to eat crow. But for right now, it's not looking great.
The Democratic Party capitalized in previous times when popular Republican presidents were in office, gaining seats, for example, when Ronald Reagan was in office. And the same thing happened with Republicans, with Bill Clinton, and certainly with Barack Obama, gaining lots of seats in the national and state legislatures. Do you think the Trump victory could be a boon for the Democratic Party?
Look, I think that the Trump brand is very tarnished right now. The things that he campaigned on to deliver for the working class individuals of this great country, he's not doing. He just gave a tax cut, and the majority of it, 80% of the benefits, went to the super wealthy. And so we all got trickled on. And that's not right. That's not what he campaigned on. Folks are seeing through that. And ultimately, I do think Democrats are going to deliver, because we're talking about restoring things and fighting for the things that everyone, all of the families in Louisiana, are talking about around the dinner table every night. That's what Democrats are going to deliver on, and I think that we're going to be rewarded this November.
The campaign 3 years ago against David Vitter was largely one about the senator's personal failings. Will the campaign against Donald Trump, and mind you, Trump in a way is on every ballot, even though his name may not be there, his policies and his personality are evident in every race in this country. The Trump personal issues, will they be a factor?
Look, I don't see how they can't be, but the vast majority, I know all of our candidates, are focused on delivering for our state. And the failures of this blind ideological purity that most, that our Republican delegation here out of Louisiana that is bent towards, you know, that's what folks, that's why I think so many people are responding to our Democratic candidates right now, is because they're seeing that that's just not working. This blind allegiance to these higher echelon goals are just not delivering. It's not delivering for the state. Whether it's Garrett Graves or Clay Higgins, neither one of them are delivering for their districts, and people see that.
Here's an easy one, Stephen, but if Hillary Clinton had been elected president and it was revealed that she had had a sexual relationship with a pornographic film star and then paid him or her $130,000 in hush money through her lawyer, would she be under fire by the Republican Party right now?
Oh, my gosh. Of course she would. You know, this is a whole new world that we're living in, Jim. And it's quite shocking in some regards. And in other regards, you know, you almost just have to shake your head and say, of course. You know, what I'm getting nervous about is our normal decorum seems to be gone. The things that we used to be able to count on in respect for the institutions are slowly starting to evaporate because they're being overtaken by the cult of personality. That's scary for our country and where we're going in the future. You know, red, blue, Democrat, Republican, it doesn't really much matter.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on the air with Stephen Handwerk.
Yeah, good afternoon. I mean, good morning. I know Mr. Wagaspak yesterday had said that he would welcome having an informed debate and talk with people who are, I guess, stakeholders in these issues, but to really just say blithely as if it's established fact that when people get their raises wage that it, the economy goes to hell. That's just not true.
All right. What you addressed this earlier, but $8.50 an hour is the minimum wage in the great state of Arkansas. It's $7.25 in Louisiana, one of only a handful of states still at the federal level. Stephen, there are businesses that operate on small margins, and Stephen Wagusback said that this would be a killer to them to raise the minimum wage in Louisiana. If you do the math, $1.25 extra an hour is, what, $50 a week on a 40-hour week? Do you think that would kill many businesses?
You know, I really don't believe that. I've been in, you know, I used to run a bunch of fast food restaurants back in the day. And we had a lot of minimum wage workers at the time, which was $3.65 at the time. And I got to tell you, when we raised those, we were going through the different raises, it didn't affect our bottom line at all. What really came down to, yes, a few of the prices went up. We had to raise the price of a Big Mac by a nickel, I think. And so some of those are actually passed on to the clients. But at the end of the day, you keep people longer. The retention, when you're actually giving your employees a little bit more, is makes them stay a little bit longer and makes them a little bit more loyal. That's what we've got to do. It's helpful to employees to feel good about getting that paycheck. And that's what I think that we can do. Even if it's a modest means of increasing it a little bit, I think that it'll behoove our state. It'll certainly help folks.
Well, Stephen Handwerk, good luck with the True Blue Gala. It is Friday night, Friday, 7 p.m., Crown Plaza, Baton Rouge, LouisianaDemocrats.org, if you have an interest in seeing and hearing Governor Terry McAuliffe of Virginia. Stephen, it's always good to talk with you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
We'll be back after this pause for the news on 89.3 WRK. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Ali Baltazar is producing. And the last few days, we have tried unsuccessfully to let you hear an interview with Tracy Fessenden, a fascinating lady, and we do intend to have her on soon. She's written a captivating book about the great jazz singer Billie Holiday. So if things go according to plan, we will hear from Tracy tomorrow right here. So hope you'll be with us to hear the interview with Tracy Fessenden. Billie Holiday died tragically, age of 44, but what a musical legacy. We're joined now by a gentleman from the American Gaming Association, and this is an interview that is timely because it is a case in which now all states and perhaps the federal government are looking for a way to capitalize on this Supreme Court decision of yesterday that permits sports gaming all over the country. And with us is Casey Clark. Good morning, Casey.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Well, what is the significance of this decision?
Well, since 1992, there's been a federal prohibition on sports betting, essentially limiting full-fledged sports gambling to the state of Nevada. The Supreme Court on Monday, ruled that that federal prohibition is unconstitutional. So what that did was pave the way for states like Louisiana to determine for themselves whether their constituents would want this in terms of a form of gaming, and then pass legislations and regulations that would bring it above board.
Will colleges, for example, LSU, will LSU get a cut of the action?
It's too early to tell, but certainly there's a lot of people who are trying to put their hands in a still-to-be-determined pot. But I think there's a lot of opportunity for people to monetize this should it be done the right way. You know, our estimation has been that there's upwards of $150 billion illegally bet on sports in this country a year. Our job at the American Gaming Association for the last several years has been to bring attention to this and strive for advocate for legal frameworks that shut down that illegal market. And I think we now have the opportunity to do that.
877-217-5757 if you'd like to join Casey Clark of the American Gaming Association. Today there is a story in the New York Times with a headline, "Expected Boom in Betting Should Do Same for Sports Media." Now, some of the ratings, as we know, have declined for sporting events, the major ones over the last few years, and attendance certainly is down at games across the country. Will this stimulate sports activities and spectator attention because of this ruling by the High Court?
I would think so. I mean, if you look at what fantasy sports proved, is that people will engage longer and more often in sport when they have something on the line. You know, we've joked that you know, people will watch the fourth quarter of a Tampa Bay Buccaneers Browns football game when there's nothing on the line except for the fact they've got a wide receiver in their fantasy lineup. Certainly, if you look at what betting could do, it could do a lot for fan avidity. It could do a lot for fan engagement and give people an opportunity to engage in a way that, candidly, a lot of people are already doing, but do it in a legal way.
When you place a bet on a game, does it automatically heighten the interest?
I don't know the answer to that, and I don't think there's one answer for everybody. I think it probably differs per person, and you know, there's a lot of people who won't place any bets on a game, and a lot of sports fans who like to go to the game and don't need that or want that. So I don't know the answer about whether it does. I think it provides another venue for and another way for people to engage in those kind of competitions.
Well, according to a Nielsen study, this is from the New York Times, this was commissioned by your organization, the American Gaming Association, sports bettors made up 25% of the NFL's television audience in 2015, but accounted for 47% of all minutes viewed. So as we know, when you bet on a game, you're not betting particularly on who wins or loses, you're betting on the point spread. And the point spread is usually still in play late in a game, even if a game's a blowout. Usually these odds makers get it pretty close to where it finishes. I would think that this would be a very good thing for those who want more meat in the seats, that the people who want the way it used to be when Tiger Stadium wasn't half empty on a Saturday night.
I think that's right, and I think the NFL has an issue with pace and play, and the NFL's had viewership concerns, and you know I think that you know that Nielsen data that we commissioned in, a couple of years ago certainly proves that.
And when I say half empty, even when it's half empty, those seats have been sold, and that's what we're seeing is that a lot, particularly a lot of these corporations, they buy tickets. They may give them to their clients, and they watch maybe a half. They try to beat the traffic. They get out of Dodge, and the game goes on with the stadium not near capacity. If you're betting on a game, and let's say LSU is favored by 25 points, which often happens, and the score at the end of the third quarter is 38-14, then your bet is still in play, even if the outcome of the game is not. So I would think this would stimulate activity, and that's probably another reason why colleges and professional teams probably say, hey, we want a cut of the action. How would that work? How would that happen?
Well, I mean, one, I don't think LSU has a problem with fan avidity, right? There's pretty rabid fan base. But I think
when it's a close game.
That's a fair point. But I think that how people monetize this is still to be determined and will be determined over the course of several years as states roll these things out. You know, what the Supreme Court did didn't enable anything other than states and sovereign tribal nations to decide for themselves what works best. So this still will require acts of the state legislature to put in motion the right kind of frameworks and in those negotiations and in that conversation, I think there'll be a lot around who has access to what and you know how people monetize. Our sense is that you know there's a lot of money to be had for sports franchises and leagues and others with increased sponsorships and the fan engagement that we've talked a lot about this morning. But, you know, how else they monetize, I think, is still kind of in the details.
Will this perhaps cause more issues with problem gaming? That's a question from Kylie. Should this be a consideration that we may have more people who bet money that they shouldn't? After all, more people lose than win when they place bets.
It's a good question, Kylie, and I'm glad that you raised it. It's certainly something that we think a lot about. We are, as an industry, have a vested interest in making sure that anyone who has an issue gets the help that they need. That's why we invest hundreds of millions of dollars every year to support those programs. What I would say is that there are zero protections within the massive black market that we've been living with for 25 years. So what we are enabled to do now because of the court's ruling is put in place policies that can help to bring that above board, get regulation involved and oversight that will help police activity and really give a structure to this in a way that we haven't had before. So we will continue to, we'll always be committed to providing those kind of programs and that kind of support. But really what we have the opportunity now to do is to focus efforts on a legal market that provides those kind of protections.
With the internet, it is now possible, Casey, to bet on every pitch, every play. Is this going to happen? Is it going to become that sophisticated?
I would be surprised if it was that sophisticated early. I'm sure the technology and innovation becomes critical to the advancement of this and other forms, just as it has for other forms of entertainment. What you see in Nevada, which is the model, because it's the only one we have, but it's worked very well, is highly regulated market with significant oversight, but also they offer mobile intrastate gaming. So you could have an app on your phone, place a wager on that app within the confines of the state of Nevada, and the minute your phone kind of crosses the border, your geofence out, so you wouldn't be able to access that. And I suspect you'd see more of that, and that's what we've seen in some of the states that were early adopters as they prepared for the court to rule.
Is there any chance of games being fixed?
I would challenge anyone to suggest that there's more challenge to integrity of sports in a legal market than there is in an illegal one. I think we've been working within a significant and robust illegal market that's in a lot of places very sophisticated and easy for consumers to engage in. But leagues and gaming operators and others spend a lot of money on services that help protect those sports. And luckily, those have been few and far between. The issues we've had have been few and far between because of that kind of oversight. So I think that legal regulated sports gambling will provide the kind of will bring that out of the shadows and give us a better chance to actually regulate that in a constructive way.
Well, this is an industry, as you note, that is largely underground, but it's in the billions as far as participation. Is there any estimate on how big the industry is as far as what is spent each year?
Well, we've estimated that as much as $150 billion is wagered on sports every year. So, and we've seen estimates that are, that are lower than that are $40 billion. We've seen estimates that are higher than that, around $500 billion. But our estimates are around $150 billion. So I don't think we would see a one-for-one, I don't think all of a sudden this becomes a $150 billion legal market. But I do think that, we can, if we do this the right way, choke off the illegal operators, free up.
All right, we do have to roll. But thank you so much, Casey Clark, American Gaming Association, for back. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And we are now joined by Chuck Hawthorne, a remarkable singer who is performing tonight at the Dyson House in Baton Rouge. And it is good to share the microphone with you, Chuck.
How are you doing this morning, Jim?
I'm doing well, and you have an amazing backstory.
Yeah, I guess it's a little atypical.
A little bit. Now, how many years were you in the U.S. Marine Corps?
I was in for 21 years.
21 years. And then how did you have this epiphany that, hey, I could be a successful singer?
I'd always played and sang music since I was a kid, and music was really a big part of our upbringing, and I never really stopped. Marine Corps is the best booking agency in the world, I tell you. I got to play music in places and all over, like Australia and Hawaii and Japan, and so I never really quit. But mostly it was songs I was writing for friends and family, but I ended up meeting a guy named Ray Bonneville at an airport in Chicago, and this is a Juno Award winner. In fact, he was out in New Orleans for a while. Juno Award winning singer-songwriter, and it was just a chance meeting in the airport. We were both carrying guitars and struck up a conversation, and the next thing I know, he was producing a record for me and kicking me out on the road.
Well, you were not only performing here tonight at the Dyson House, 7575 Jefferson Highway, at the listening room, but, by the way, 7:30 is the start time. I see Friday, Aiken, South Carolina, Monday of next week, Richmond, Virginia, followed by an appearance later in the week in Lansdowne, Pennsylvania, then Storrs, Connecticut, Montclair, New Jersey. You're a busy man.
Yeah, this is going to be a good run. And Dyson House in Baton Rouge tonight is the first show of this tour.
Well, congratulations on making it the first show of its tour. The Dyson House has reopened after being closed for a little while, but it is a fantastic place to hear music. And how would you characterize the kind of music you do, Chuck?
Oh, I guess, you know, the latest buzzword is genre is Americana, and I guess that's where I fall under. You know, what it really is, I think, is folk music.
Well, let's give it a listen. The remarkable Chuck Hawthorne, 21 years in the U.S. Marine Corps, and he's become quite an established star, and he is starting a nationwide tour tonight at the Dyson House Listening Room right here in Baton Rouge. The title track from the album Silver Line, Chuck's debut, performed in Austin, Texas, and I suspect you're quite pleased at the reaction to your work.
Yeah, I was really surprised at how well that record did. You know, somebody in their 40s coming out of nowhere, and it was really well received, both here and in Europe, actually, and I couldn't have been more happy with the way it was received, and got me out on the road and touring behind it, and had a lot of great players on it. Besides Ray Bonneville, was, Liza Gilkinson and Gerf Morlicks, and some really, really cool cats, and I was honored to get to play with.
Michael Martin Murphy was one of those who was quite impressed.
Yeah, and boy, what a... That whole thing was just surreal, you know, because I've been a Murphy fan since I was a kid, and to get the opportunity to meet him and perform with him has just been a huge honor, and I'm grateful to get the chance to do that.
Do you have any folk music influences who inspired you as a younger person?
You know, I was growing up, the music was predominantly country music and the old school Johnny Cash and Cal Smith and Tom T. Hall and those kind of folks, and Loretta Lynn, and so that was a huge influence on me. But, you know, a lot of those old what really ended up being country standards were old folk ballads, way you know, they're just ancient melodies and songs, really. The words just kind of got changed throughout the centuries. And so, I, you know, from that perspective, absolutely. I really didn't get deep into the folk movement in the 1950s and 60s and the folk revival and all that until I was in my 20s.
Well, congratulations on this rise to stardom. And Chuck has now got, he's got a nationwide audience. And as you note, popular beyond the United States. How does that happen?
Well, you know, I was at a music conference, and I walked up to the only guy in the room that was wearing a kilt. And it turns out he was a Rob Ellen was a promoter out in Scotland, and he and I linked up together and put a tour together for me. It was an incredible thing. I think we ended up, that first tour over there, I think we ended up doing like 35 shows in 30 days or something like that. And we just had a really good run. And he promoted my record over there and then ended up touring and managed me as I was touring behind it as well. So it's a pretty cool deal.
Well, thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure, and hopefully we'll talk again. But he starts his nationwide tour tonight at the Dyson House Listening Room, 7575 Jefferson Highway. Chuck Hawthorne. Chuck, congratulations. See you soon.
Jim, thank you so much for having me. I sure appreciate it.
My pleasure. And listener notes that Mark Cohn, remember Walking in Memphis? He'll be at the Manship Theater tonight. So we've got quite a musical collection of talent in our midst right here in this community tonight. So it is good for Baton Rouge. Governor John Bel Edwards will be with us today at 2 o'clock for Ask the Governor. Hope you'll be here. And if you have a question for the governor, this is your monthly opportunity to talk with him. He's been doing this show now. I think this is the fifth show of this month. He did 12 this year, 12 last year, and he did 9 the first year, so 9 plus 12 plus 5, what's that, Allie Baltazar? I think that's 26 shows, show number 26 for John Bel Edwards today. And much to talk about with him as a special session is in the offing. The fiscal cliff is still a possibility, and some issues have really gone the distance this time. Voters will have a say on split jury verdicts. That's coming because of a 28-7 vote in the Louisiana Senate on the House bill that passed 82-15 earlier in the week. Bills calling for a vote on a constitutional amendment must be approved by two-thirds of the House and Senate. So this was a heavy lift, 26 votes in the Senate, 70 in the House, and it made the rounds successfully, and now it will go before the voters this fall. It will be on the ballot, and you can bet there will be some opposition to this as well, probably from the District Attorneys Association. So Louisiana is one of only two states with non-unanimous juries being possible. 10 of 12 can vote one way or the other, and a person can either be found not guilty or guilty based on a non-unanimous jury verdict. It looks like this will change. It will change if the voters of Louisiana say it's a good thing. But I would imagine the vote of the people will be much closer than the vote was in the legislature. Bulletproof backpacks would be legal in public schools under a bill that breezed through the legislature. Governor John Bel Edwards says he will sign the bill, which cleared the House 82-6. And that's another one. And the Harris deal is back on because of a 4-3 vote in a Senate committee. It clears the Senate. Governor John Bel Edwards will have to decide whether to grant Harris a new long-term deal for what amounts to a monopoly land casino in the great city of New Orleans. And yesterday, the legislature gave final approval to allowing the riverboat casinos to move to land. And Governor Edwards has indicated he's probably going to be okay with this, and we'll sign that one into law. We'll talk with the governor later today, and we'll be back tomorrow right here, same time, same place. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.